The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. It is time for the Hard Rock Empire on this Sunday, March 23rd, 2025. I am Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us. And we are back with the best rock and metal music from across the world of rock and metal. All the way around the world, we've gone to find the best releases from, in this case, March the 7th, 2025. And we are really excited for another great week of music, and maybe not as deep a week this week, but overall still some really good stuff that we'll be excited to bring to you coming up this week on the Hard Rock Empire, and a new segment coming up at the end of today's program. Joining me in studio, as always, is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. Yeah, we're almost through March as far as the calendar goes. Not so much with the music, as we're a couple weeks behind on that as usual. Yeah, you know, I think the overall level of quality may have taken a dip this week as far as the number of bands that really stood out to me. But a lot of variety. I think if you're into stuff that maybe isn't my cup of tea, you were still going to be pretty well satisfied with the music this week. And I think the stuff that we picked's all very strong. I'm excited to debut this new little segment and kind of talk about some, you know, quick but interesting topics and music as far as ranked lists go.
Yeah, it's a little bit something a little different at the end of the program, as our vault segment's going to get a little bit shorter now that we're not doing the year by year thing. So we don't have as many bands to talk about. So we're going to be diving into a different kind of topic at the end. We'll save that for the end of the program, but we're going to jump into our news headlines to get things started. And nothing like breaking as far as news goes, just a few interesting news items this week. So we'll get started. And the first one involves a tribute album from Metalville Records for the late Paul Di'Anno. Of course, he was the front man of two big Iron Maiden albums, and would have celebrated his 67th birthday. Unfortunately, passed away back in October. And so they are going to be releasing this In Memory Of album that the proceeds will go to charity. And we'll have some of his live stuff, some other stuff from outside of Iron Maiden that he did, and also some unreleased work as well. So I think if you're a fan of Paul Di'Anno or just want to, you know, support somebody who gave so much to the rock and metal industry, I think it's a great opportunity to pick this album up. Mike, you've had a chance to kind of look through this. Your thoughts on this project that they're doing here?
Yeah, you know, I think anytime you do something that's going to benefit charity, that's always an admirable thing. Also really cool anytime you have tracks that have never been available physically to then offer them in this kind of package. I think fans will be excited about that. The two tracks that are brand new as far as physical go is a live version of Killers from Wacken Open Air 2015 and a song he did with his Architects of Chaos, Je Suis Charlie, which I believe has to do with the shooting at Charlie Hebdo back in 2015. Oh, yeah. As well, that terror attack there. So really cool. And, you know, I didn't necessarily follow his career all that closely post Maiden, but still really cool and unfortunate what happened to him. And it's kind of bittersweet that he and Bruce Dickinson did meet each other not too long before his passing. It's a shame we never really got a chance to have some sort of live Iron Maiden set that featured him coming back and singing some of the stuff, the earlier works along with Bruce. But yeah, I mean, Nothing negative to say about this. It's for a good cause, and the guy's definitely well respected in the industry where he was.
Yeah, and you know, definitely check out that article. It has a little more information about some other things in his life. A retrospective album from September came out, The Book of the Beast. Also, The Book to Hell and Back with the Beast and Mini Beast is available for pre-order. So if you're looking to maybe pick up what would have been his last work, and in this case, a book, you can do that as well. But yeah, just really sad news. And like Mike said, you know, there was kind of some, I don't want to say reconciliation, because I don't know if it was quite to that point, but a chance to kind of mend some fences there. And you were kind of hopeful that maybe that was going to lead to some really cool things. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out that way. But really cool project. Definitely encourage you to check it out if you're a fan of Iron Maiden, if you're a fan of Paul Di'Anno, or just a metal fan in general. I think you're going to find something good in this album. So check that out. Another news item this week, just kind of almost quietly broke last week, that Guns N' Roses has a new drummer. It's Isaac Carpenter, who will hit the road with their upcoming European, Asian, and Middle East tour. The band last week announced the amicable exit of Frank Ferrer, who was their long-serving drummer in their storied run. Again, just kind of happened under the radar a little bit, and they had, clearly it was something that they knew was coming, because the replacement was announced almost, you know, at the same time that he announced his exit. So can't say it's a big shocking news, but anytime one of these legacy bands changes a member, or just somebody who decides they're not going to go out on tour anymore, it is certainly newsworthy. Any thoughts on the switch here for Guns N' Roses?
It's kind of wild to think about that Frank Ferrer was actually the longest tenured drummer in the history of Guns N' Roses. The guy joined the band in 2006.
Yeah.
So he was the drummer who'd been there the longest, you know, with obviously Matt Sorum and what's his name? Totally blanked on his name. Let's see.
Steven Adler.
Yeah. Totally lost on that one. But, you know, being there prior and probably more notable as far as who you think of when you think of drummer for Guns N' Roses, either one of them, Adler having been there for Appetite for Destruction and Sorum being there for the two Use Your Illusion albums. But, you know, Isaac Carpenter isn't just some random dude. You know, he's played with Duff McKagan's Loaded, so he had a connection to the band already. He was a co-founder of the band Loudermilk, who had signed to Rick Rubin's label back in the 90s. He's also played with AWOL Nation, Adam Lambert, Barbarians of California, A Perfect Circle, The X's, Hours, Black Lab, and has played as session musician on a number of albums and has TV credits. So the guy's been around the industry for quite a while. Definitely not just some guy they found on YouTube.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing that always kind of makes you feel a little bit better. No offense to the people who kind of take advantage of the casting calls. I know there are still a few of them out there that we've talked about on this podcast
where, sure,
positions are open and they're out there looking through interviews. But when you have a guy that's kind of already a guy in mind, like, hey, you know, if this happens, if we have to make a change here, this is a guy we need to reach out to and see if he's interested. And clearly he was. And so Isaac Carpenter will take over, and like you said, I mean, this is a band that at one point kind of went through some drummers, and now, you know, it's been a while since they've had that change. But again, I think at this point, they kind of know what they're getting by bringing him in. And I feel like that's probably a move to kind of keep everything nice and stable as they get ready to go on a pretty lengthy tour.
Yeah.
Through Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. So again, nothing really earth shattering. It's not like somebody thrown out of the band news or anything like that. Just a change of the guard for Guns N' Roses behind the kit. So congrats to Isaac Carpenter, and certainly wish them the best on their upcoming 2025 tour. One other news item we'll get to today, and we always like talking about, you know, your classic bands, and maybe a very underrated classic band from the 1970s is the band Sweet. And the news broke this week that they are going to release an album of Rare songs called Platinum Rare 1. It'll be in stores on May 23rd via Metalville Records. It includes extremely rare recordings by the four original Sweet members. Of course, the band has sold more than 55 million records over the years, 34 number one chart positions. You know, I don't know, like, and you look at, you know, the track listing, and obviously it'll be really interesting to hear what all this sounds like. But, you know, I think the bigger thing here is it's great to see that, you know, they're continuing to release maybe some older stuff of Sweet. They're a band that, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to get the respect. It doesn't feel like compared to some of the other bands of that era. But when you go through these guys' greatest hits, you can put them up there against just about anybody of that era, and it's going to hold up pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. These guys are legendary as far as that 70s glam rock era goes. Kind of similar to the Paul Di'Anno story, and similar record label, Metalville, releasing both of these. But I'm always a fan of these kind of rarities, unreleased, obscure demos, rough mixes. I think that's really cool to make available to kind of your hardcore fan base. And they certainly have one. I mean, they've sold over 50 million albums over the years, so they definitely have an established fan base that I think will eat this up. to your point about them being underrated, I think they're totally underrated. There's probably a generation of people who might know them more just because other people have covered Ballroom Blitz over the years more than maybe for their own material, which is unfortunate. I think even if you're not interested in this kind of rarity package, you can go on Amazon right now and buy a single disc greatest hits of theirs for like $5. It has just some amazing tracks like Blockbuster, Hellraiser, Ballroom Blitz, Teenage Rampage, Little Willie, Wigwam Bam, Action, Lies in Your Eyes, Alexander Graham Bell, Fox on the Run. It's, you owe it to yourself to give it a listen, because these guys just ultra catchy 70s rock icons, really.
And I'm not sure why they kind of fell through the cracks, maybe compared to other bands of the 70s. I don't know if it was a timing thing with disco kind of taking over in the second half of the decade that maybe. These guys, for whatever reason, just didn't get the same airplay. Obviously, they had a lot of success, 34 number one. So, I mean, they were getting a lot of airplay and certainly respect in that era. But like you said, it feels like when, as time has gone on, instead of people kind of remembering them as being legends of the decade, it just feels like they're forgotten and used as, oh, let's cover one of their songs. You know, Ballroom Blitz obviously is one that everybody knows. You know, the first time I ever heard that song was in Wayne's World.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was covered by people in the movie. And obviously there are several covers of that song that are out there. And, you know, it's, the original is a classic. And like you said, that list of songs on their greatest hits for $5, and that's a physical copy of it. That's a really, really strong greatest hits album.
I don't know if maybe just in general, glam rock from that era hasn't really gotten the same kind of love as like the arena rock bands do and did. You know, I think history remembers bands like Journey and Boston and Kansas way more fondly, whether that's fair or not. But I think over here that seemed to have a greater hold on the music buying population than glam ever did.
Yeah. And I don't know if, again, that whole arena nature, you know, that was an era where live music was huge and those bands sounded big in those arenas. Yeah. And I don't know if that had something to do with it, but really talented group. Just like I said, I don't know how much of this rare stuff that I like really want to dive into, but I do kind of want to hear it just to hear what it sounds like, because these guys are super talented.
Interesting.
Yeah. So again, that'll be coming up in May if you want to pick that up. May 23rd via Metalville Records, who are very busy right now releasing collections. So definitely check that out. Rare recordings from the band Sweet. Just a reminder, check out our website, nerdcastempire.com. Of course, we're on social media across the board at Nerdcast Empire. No newscast tomorrow. Starting a new job, a non-podcast related job. Hopefully, we'll be back on Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern for the Wednesday edition of the Nerdcast News Report. We'll let you know on social media if we have to change or move that around or whatever it may be. But we'll get caught up on the news at midweek. And then, of course, we'll be back next Sunday night, 7 o'clock Eastern time, for another episode of the Hard Rock Empire. And it'll be the music of March the 14th coming up next Sunday night as we get into the middle of March. But it is time to get to the music of the first week of March, March the 7th in this case. And that reminds me, I need to paste the playlist as I talk in the chat. And, of course, each and every week, Mike will go through and pull a list of the new releases for a given date. And then we'll pull a track from each of those releases, or at least the ones he can find. And then he goes through them all. And, you know, sometimes that's a good thing and sometimes that's torture, but, you know, he does it for the show. And once he does that, he picks the ones that really stand out. Then we go through them and kind of narrow them down even further to get down to the two bands and two releases of the given date that we will recommend on the podcast. And it wasn't quite as deep a week. It doesn't mean the music was bad, but it just feels like maybe there was more of an emphasis on types of music that I'm not as fond of this week.
That's fair.
Which is completely fair. And that's why we post the playlists and we post them as a card on the YouTube VOD. If you're checking us out on our VOD on YouTube, so you can go through and you can listen to all the tracks and find something, because I think there's some stuff for everybody out there this week. It's just maybe not as much stuff for me this week as we've had. But to be honest, we've had a run of about a month where we just were overloaded with stuff that kind of fell into our genre. But having said that, we've still got some really good stuff this week. We've got four really good albums that you're going to want to check out from March the 7th. And Mike, as always, you're going to lead us off. What do you got for us first?
Yeah, so before I jump in, just kind of looking at the numbers so far year to date, as we kind of like to track where our music picks are coming from. And this year, we have actually started tracking the record labels as well. With 36 albums selected so far, we are looking at a tie right now between the United States and Sweden with 7 albums each, followed by the United Kingdom with 6 and Italy with 4. So probably not too surprising.
No.
As far as the record labels go, also not surprising, Frontiers is currently leading the way with 6 albums, followed by self-produced albums with 4. Then we have Rockshots, Roar, Pride and Joy, Napalm, and Dying Victims, each with 2. Those are labels I see on the list week in and week out, so certainly not surprising to see them getting multiple selections.
No, I think really neither one of those are a huge shock. I think about 40% of the music coming from the U.S. and Sweden, and it's about 55% if you add in the U.K. So it kind of makes a lot of sense. Those are countries we're pretty heavy in the music that they release, and obviously we're from the U.S., so yeah. Not too surprising that that's always up there. And record labels, obviously Frontiers is one that I certainly enjoy, which is going to lead to the Vault discussion coming up in a little bit. But I think the thing about labels that was interesting is there are a lot, and there are also a lot of bands that are just doing it themselves, which was pretty high up on the list as well.
I feel like we're early on. Frontiers was kind of the obvious, like, hey, we know they're going to release albums that interest us. But I think we've seen kind of a surge in other labels kind of stepping up, whether it be Roar, Pride and Joy, Dying Victims, Wormhole Death, Raining Phoenix. They're stepping up their games, I think. You know, with Megadeth's most recent move to a Frontier sub label, I think you're just seeing more and more of these bands kind of latching on to maybe labels that are more in line with their vision of music. And it should make the rest of this year and forward pretty interesting.
Yeah. Finding labels that actually want to push bands that are of a certain type, whether it's metal or maybe classic rock or whatever it may be, instead of these mega labels that maybe just want the newest and best and brightest and not worry so much about the bands who maybe they feel like aren't going to top the charts anymore. But it's good for us, and it's great for those labels. We're certainly appreciative. I know the bands are as well, that those labels are out there doing the work they're doing, because it allows us to talk about some great music each and every week. And like I said, got 4 great bands this week, and let us know what you got for pick number 1.
Yeah, so getting into that, this was a band who originally appeared on last week's list, but as I as I was looking into the album, it appears to be a re-release that originally came out last year. The date that kept jumping out at me, though, was March 7th for the re-release, as opposed to any date in February. So even though I'm still kind of seeing conflicting information, we're going with March 7th. This is actually the first EP from a thrash metal band from Stockholm, Sweden. The band is called Bloodstain, and this EP is I Am Death.
Yeah, this was really good from last week. I had a chance to listen to most of it last week, and then you'd noted that it was not a last week band, unless as far as we could tell, that the album was not coming out last week, and it was actually coming out this week. So kind of worked out. We had a really heavy week last week, yeah. So able to punt this one to this week, but still certainly very worthy of being chosen this week.
Yeah, absolutely. So this band is made up of Jonathan Thyberg on bass, Benjamin Norgren on drums, Oscar Lindros on guitars, and Linus Linden on vocals and guitars. We talk a lot about classic bands, especially in the new wave of British heavy metal and kind of the Bay Area thrash scene, that are still out there doing it, which is always awesome, of course. But it's even more cool at times when you run into new bands who are undoubtedly kind of carrying the torch and the flag for that sound and are clearly super influenced by those bands. And that's Bloodstain to a T. You can hear it right off the bat when you listen to this from the title track, I Am Death. It feels like Kill 'Em All era Metallica, Megadeth, and Testament kind of all wrapped into one package, where if you told me this was Metallica releasing an album in between Kill 'Em All and Ride the Lightning, I would almost believe you. Mm-hmm. But they nail it. I mean, if that's their influence, they're right on it. The EP itself is really short. You got 6 tracks, 21 minutes. And the fact that it's been a year since it's been released, and it's already been picked up by a label and being re-released, I hope that means that this is getting more and more traction, and then they're kind of taking that next step forward to hopefully become huge, because I think music like this, it's so quintessentially metal. Like, even though it's a subgenre, it's thrash, it's speed metal, I feel like it's at the same time heavy metal kind of distilled to its purest form. Mm-hmm. And I think music like that will always have an audience and will always feel viable. I noticed the title track on YouTube Music has over 22,000 plays, which is hopefully a good sign. Hopefully that means people not only there are listening to it, but on other platforms as well. All six tracks are worth checking out, but as far as our show goes, I went ahead and picked the title track, I Am Death, to listen to now.
And a reminder that if you are listening on our podcast network, which of course you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, you can listen to all of our daily podcast or every other day podcast, but we do not have the music clips on there. So if you want to catch the music clips, the best place is to catch us live, and you can try the VODs obviously on Twitch and YouTube and hope that they don't get muted after the fact. Yeah, I mean, you listen to that song in particular, and if you had told me it was a cover of a Metallica song, I would have
like Creeping Death.
Like. Yeah, for sure. Like, there's no question there's the influence there. But having said that, as we talk about a lot, you know, it's one thing to be influenced, another thing to kind of copy it. And these guys don't copy it. They're clearly influenced by that sound as it comes across on this EP, but it is. The sound they create is uniquely theirs, and I think that is really important and maybe a lesson for other bands out there is, you know, if you're going to use your influences to kind of guide your music, make sure that whatever you end up producing at the end is kind of yours, that you can take pieces of different bands, but it's not just you sounding like you're trying to be a cover band, because that's, you know, you can go out and be a cover band. There's plenty of call for that. But if you want to kind of make your own name, you've got to have something that says, oh, that is Bloodstain, that is definitively theirs. And I think they find a way to do that in this EP.
Well, that, and also this is a band that started in 2023. This is their first EP. So what we're listening to now is kind of just a reflection of their influences and them kind of getting acquainted with what it is to be them. I think just as Metallica's Kill 'Em All doesn't sound like Master of Puppets, I think, or even Ride the Lightning for that matter, I think as these guys release the next couple albums, you're going to see kind of a deviation and maybe them finding their own distinct what makes Bloodstain Bloodstain that'll still carry those influences, but it'll also see wherever their evolution goes. And it'll be interesting to hear it.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a great EP. It's great that it's been picked up by a label and pushed back out there for people who didn't catch it the first time. And excited to see what might follow from these guys when they get to a full album, but that is Bloodstain. Definitely check those guys out this week. Of course, as always, you have two bands that you are spotlighting in their new releases this week. What do you got for pick number two?
Yeah, so for pick number two, we have a little more of a tenured band. They've been around since 2014. It is their third full-length studio album. This band's from Sacramento, California. They are a power metal band. Their name is Nivian, and the album is Queen of Phantoms.
Yeah, I didn't get to listen to this whole album, but the track that was on the playlist really jumped out, and I thought this was one of the stronger picks of the entire week, and really kind of interested to hear more about these guys.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this album. Looking at the band, it looks like since their prior album, which was in 2020, The Ruthless Divine, they do have a new bassist, Tyler Satterley. He is joining Mark Miner on guitars, Norman Skinner on vocals, Gary Tarpley on guitars, Aaron Robich on keyboards, and Isaiah A.R. on drums. Checking out this album and being a power metal fan, I was pretty sure I'd enjoy it. But something I appreciate about it is while it's power metal, I think it leans a little more into the heavy side of power metal. It's still big and bombastic. It has the heaviness, though. Still, it's not as maybe symphonic or overly melodic as some of the other power metal bands get out there. It's got harsh vocals at times to kind of separate it from maybe the more falsetto laden side of power metal as a genre. Like I mentioned, they've been around since 2014. And according to the review on Metal Rules, this band shared the stage with Amon Amarth, Testament, Warrant, Hammerfall, Primal Fear, Angra, Delane, Soulfly, Rhapsody, Amorphis, Butcher Babies, and more, which is kind of cool because it kind of speaks to where this band is able to really fit on any kind of metal bill. When you think Amon Amarth and Warrant.
Yeah.
Those are pretty, and Soulfly, throw them in there too. You kind of have some diverging areas as far as metal sound. Still metal, but definitely different ends of the spectrum, and these guys are able to tour and fit in anywhere. I stumbled onto their lead singer's website, Norman Skinner, and The website refers to him as the Metal Chameleon. And the more you listen to the album, you do kind of get the feeling that his vocals would fit pretty much any style of metal you want to play, which I think kind of ties into that chameleon moniker. And when you see the bands that they've played with, that's kind of helps, I suppose. Standout tracks on the album include 12 BC Germania, Some Wounds Never Heal, All Debts Repaid, Our Maze, and the track that I picked to check out, the title track Queen of Phantoms.
Well, they definitely have a unique sound, and that's kind of one thing that, you know, when you go through the playlist and you listen to all these songs, obviously you listen to a lot more of these than I do, but, you know, when you find a band that really has something that sounds different than all the other bands that we listen to each and every week, I think that gives them a little bit of a leg up, especially if they can do it well, and these guys really did it well.
Well, yeah, you think just the different vocal styles you heard just in that snippet, like it's kind of all over the place, but it works. It sounds good. And it kind of gives them a distinct sound that I'm always a fan of.
Yeah. I think anytime you can carve out your own space in the genre, I think you're doing something right. And these guys are clearly doing something right. So definitely check out Nivian and their new album this week. I've got two picks as well. We're going to get things started. We are headed to, originally to the Netherlands, but this is a band that now considers themselves a German and Dutch progressive metal band. Founded all the way back in 1988, this is Sacrosanct with Kidron, their new album this week. And first off, there are a lot of bands named Sacrosanct, and certainly a couple of bands in the metal space. There's also, not to be confused with a band out of Turkey that is also Sacrosanct, but when you see their logo, you'll know that they're not probably in the same type of metal as these guys. Some refer to these guys as progressive heavy thrash, others progressive metal cult. Either way, it definitely has a melodic sound to this album, and I saw a couple reviews kind of note that this may be a step kind of more toward the melodic side for these guys. Either way, whatever you want to label it, it's a really good album. This is their fifth full-length album, but the first since 2018's Necropolis. That was the first album the band had released since 1993, so this is their second effort after kind of that long stretch where they were not releasing any music. Metal Epidemic compared these guys to Iced Earth, Fate's Warning, Sabotage, Queensryche, and the new wave of British heavy metal. So that kind of gives you, again, kind of a wide range to some degree, but you definitely hear at times influences from all of those on this album. Band is made up of Max Morton on vocals and bass, Randy Meinhard on guitars, Garrett Knoll on guitars, Jonas Schultz on drums. Meinhard and Knoll date back to the early days of the band, back in the late 80s or early 90s. So they're kind of, if you want to call original members, certainly from the early days of Sacrosanct. Morton stepped up from the bass to take lead vocals after a split with their lead singer in 2021 and really has done a great job here. Vocals are powerful, show a lot of range, which is interesting when you have somebody that steps up from kind of just being a bassist to be the lead singer, but to even some falsetto in here at times. Guitars, as you would expect, are powerful and drive the melody. The drums are really strong in the back as well. It all works together really well, which you would expect out of a band that has a little bit more of a melodic sound. Kind of all has to tie together. And Sacrosanct, really have been able to do that with this album. Standout tracks include Coming of the Scorpion, Doorway of Dreams, Avenging Angel, and the track we're going to listen to on the podcast, Still Open Sore. One thing that kind of ties my two picks together this week is I think there are really, really strong guitar parts in both of the bands that I've chosen. And you heard a little bit of it there. Just really impressive guitar, you know, work in both bands. I think this band also brings the vocals, also brings the drums, and not to say the other band doesn't, but this feels like a more balanced effort, even with the guitars kind of out front. The next one we're going to talk about, really feel the guitar driven nature of that music, and we'll get to that in a moment. But first, Mike, your thoughts on Sacrosanct?
Yeah, this was definitely a contender for me. After you had selected it, I did still get to listen to most of it, and it's again, just more really strong power metal right up my alley. I'm all for it.
Yeah, for sure. Really enjoyed what these guys were able to do. Again, first album in a few years. So hopefully we'll see even more music come out from these guys in the future. But definitely check out Sacrosanct, my first pick of this week. As always, I have two picks as well. And we are headed right here to the United States for pick number two. This is a power metal band out of Brighton, Massachusetts. This is Adamantus with the album Reforged. This is a band that formed back in 2016. This is their second full-length album. One of the first reviews I saw on this was from Metal Addicts that called this album an album of guitars. And that was just, I was listening to it at the time, and it definitely hit home. And again, I don't want to come across and make it sound like the other parts of the band didn't do their job. I thought it was a really well done album and it balances really well, but the guitar parts in this are really strong, and the guitarists work really well together. I think to kind of push that forward. The group is Jeff Stark on vocals, Javier Estrada Diaz and Vance Simmons on guitar, Alex Schofield on bass, and Evgeny Gromovoy on drums. You know, we've talked about it a lot. It's great to see power metal bands out of the U.S. It's a type of music that doesn't always get a ton of love in the United States from bands, especially kind of up and coming bands. So anytime we find a power metal band that's based out of the U.S., it's really encouraging. And these guys certainly do the genre proud. Again, typically when I'm looking at power metal, just for my picks, because it kind of ties into some of the bands I pick, a lot of times they have just these overpowering vocals that are supported by the guitars and the bass and the drums. This feels like the guitars are kind of that front and center, and then you have it supported by the vocals and the bass and the drums. And again, everybody did their job really well, but the guitars here are among the strongest of any album I've picked over the last few weeks. I was really, really impressed. Standout tracks include Ride for Ruin, Reforged, Time of Contempt, and the song we're going to listen to off of this album is Steel Clad. And I kind of picked that clip to, obviously we wanted to get a little bit of the chorus, but definitely wanted to get the guitar solo that came after the chorus, because that was pretty exceptional. Again, I thought the guitars from these guys are really, really strong. And it's definitely, if you're a fan of just power guitar, power metal, you definitely need to check out this Adamantus release. Mike, your thoughts on these guys?
I love a good anthemic chorus, and I feel like the song definitely has that. Like, you could hear just people yelling Steel Clad at Wacken Open Air or something like that. But the solo was wild, both because the solo was really cool, but like at times they still had kind of the rhythm guitar playing the riff over top of the solo. Like it was actually like louder, and then the solo would kind of overtake it, and then it would come back, and just kind of a different way to handle that. But it made for a really cool sound, and definitely worth checking out more.
Yeah, I was really excited listening to this. And I think both these releases that I had, and both of Mike's releases as well, is really strong stuff again this week, in a week where maybe there wasn't as much that we would really dig. But again, that's why you got to check out the playlist. I think there's a lot of stuff out there. If you're into some different kinds of stuff, I think there's a lot of stuff out there for you this week. But we gave you what we thought were the four best album releases for March the 7th. It is time to head into the vault, where Mike and I will talk about a couple of classic albums that you need to check out. And starting off with Mike, you are literally in the vault. You are listening to albums that you own. And this is certainly, when you're talking progressive rock and classic progressive rock bands and albums, this is about as good as you can do. And certainly of the modern era. And this is certainly one that you could probably spend a whole hour podcast talking about everything about this band and about this album, but tell us what your vault pick is this week.
Yeah, you know, you really could. You're having a discussion about this album earlier. It kind of hit me that, like, if I was to ever come out with my favorite albums of all time, this would actually probably land pretty high on that list. This is just a tremendous album, and one that honestly really, really got me into this band, who I was aware of a couple of their songs before this, but this was really the first album of theirs that I dove into and listened to a lot. It is the eighth studio album, and appropriately named as the eighth album, from the American progressive metal legends Dream Theater. The album is Octavarium, came out in 2005.
First off, it's hard to imagine that this album is 20 years old.
Yeah.
It is certainly doesn't feel dated in any way, but again, if you have to show somebody one album that kind of, what is Dream Theater really about? I've heard their name. I don't really know what they're about. You could do a lot worse than just giving them Octavarium. Like, you listen to this about three or four times, and then I think you're going to understand what exactly Dream Theater is trying to do here.
Yeah, I really think this is probably the best entry point for someone who hasn't listened to Dream Theater, because it's got kind of some of the ridiculous prog stuff you expect from them, but it also has songs that are really accessible. I think looking at the Wikipedia page on the album, one of the outlets actually kind of criticized it for almost trying to be too commercial, which is funny for a band like Dream Theater. But I mean, there are songs that it wouldn't have surprised me had they gotten decent radio play, because they're kind of set up to be hits while still being Dream Theater. Kind of getting into the album, it was recorded between September 4th and February 5th, 2004, 2005, and released on June 7th, 2005. Like I mentioned before, it's one of those albums that I could spend a really long time talking about, and it's certainly one of my favorite albums of all time, but just some kind of notes on it. The album opens with the same note used at the end of the song of the, or the end of the last song on the prior album, which was In the Name of God off their 2003 album Train of Thought. So the last note from Train of Thought carries over into the beginning of Octavarium. And this is a trend that they had continued for several albums before that as well, which is just kind of a wild thing to set yourself up with. The album is written in keys starting with F and then ending back on F, spanning an entire octave between the songs, which is, again, kind of a wild thing to do. The album's first track, The Root of All of Evil, continues the 12-step suite that Mike Portnoy wrote in reference to his journey through alcoholism and sobriety. That thing alone is something people should check out. He originally wrote the song The Mirror back in 1994 on their Awake album that kind of addressed it, but afterwards decided he wanted to write an entire suite based on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's what he did. It starts in 2002 with the song The Glass Prison off of 6 Degrees of Inner Turbulence, carries on to 2003's This Dying Soul from Train of Thought. Part three is the song on this album, The Root of All Evil, continues to 2007's Repentance off of Systematic Chaos, and then finally ends in what was his last album with the band prior to just recently coming back. That was 2009's Black Clouds of Silver Linings. The song in question was The Shattered Fortress, but just an amazing piece of music. You can find YouTube videos where someone's put them all together into one video. It's certainly worth checking out. Kind of moving on this album, you have Octavarium, which is the 24-minute long final track, title track. It's broken down into 5 parts, certainly hugely influenced by kind of the classic progressive bands of the past, your Genesis, Yes, Pink Floyd. I remember listening to that song for the first time in its entirety, at least I think it was the first time, while being stuck on traffic on Interstate 275 on the way to the Ohio Pike Blockbuster. And, you know, it made the trip more bearable, and it made me realize I could sit through a 24-minute song without getting bored, which is really pretty impressive. If you're looking for more kind of accessible, radio-friendly type tracks, you got I Walk Beside You, Panic Attack, Never Enough. Great songs in their own right, but maybe a bit more digestible for fans who aren't looking for 24-minute, 15-minute songs. The album is just absolutely incredible. There's not much else I can say about it.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece, and probably them at their very best. And not to say the stuff that came after wasn't amazing as well, but this just kind of felt like where everything just kind of falls into place and you get a concept and it doesn't feel forced, even though as you describe it, it sounds like a concept that would be forced just because there's so many pieces to that puzzle. But they do such an amazing job of putting those pieces together. And like you said, there are tracks on here that you could hear standalone and think, well, that could play on the radio. Yeah. Like, this is not something that's so far out there that it wouldn't be a radio cut. But to listen to the whole thing, 75 minutes plus of this album, there are definitely some songs that would never be on the radio.
No, absolutely not. And I also failed to mention, too, that kind of like how they were doing the ending note leading from one album to the next, Octavarium is also self-contained, and that the end of the song Octavarium basically starts back up with The Root of All Evil at the end of it. So you could basically just listen to it on repeat and it just kind of loops around perfectly on itself. Just as kind of a summary, the standout tracks for me on this album, The Root of All Evil, I Walk Beside You, Panic Attack, Never Enough, Octavarium. That run of Dream Theater, I mean, this album is great, but I was looking at their albums just in the 2000s alone prior to Mike Portnoy's departure, and those albums I mentioned, Six Degrees of Inner Turbulence, Train of Thought, Octavarium, Systematic Chaos, Black Clouds and Silver Linings. That like era of the band is just amazing, and I hope people appreciate it as much as they should, because for a new fan of Dream Theater in 2005, that stuff stands up to anything.
I think the question will be, obviously, with Portnoy rejoining the band and having a big, you know, creative force back in the band with their new album coming out, is can you capture lightning in a bottle again? Can you go on another run where you can, in this decade or in the next 5 to 10 years, release another series of albums that can stand up to the test of time? I'm sure that's the goal, is, hey, can we outdo what we did 20 years ago? And if they can even come close, the new stuff's going to be amazing. Like, yeah. You know, again, just a stretch of music by a progressive band that's in the modern era of progressive rock, probably unmatched by anybody. And probably you put them up alongside some of the progressive greats like Yes and Genesis, and you can go on and on of the 70s and early 80s. It really kind of feels like a modern take on that progressive rock feel that you had, you know, 40, 50 years ago.
It really is like, what if we took those bands and just infused a little bit of Metallica in it?
Yeah.
And that is Dream Theater's brand of progressive metal, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of people are, and excited to see as they begin the second chapter of the band, kind of what that's going to look like. But definitely check out Octavarium from Dream Theater, Mike's Vault pick. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we've talked a lot about Frontiers Records. It's typically one of our top pick labels. Their music, the music they have, whether it is classic rock bands that are looking for a label and they can find a home there, or possibly some up and coming bands that maybe you're just missing a piece to the puzzle and they can find a lead singer or some other driving force of the band that can kind of take them to the next level. That's pretty much what Frontiers is about. So with that in mind, I've decided in this next run through the vault, which is going to, you know, last almost a full year, we're going to go through the Wikipedia list of Frontiers bands. And basically in the first week on each letter, I will pick a band and an album. And then the second week, we're going to put all the remaining bands of that letter in a randomizer and allow it to pick a band. And then I'll pick an album. The rules, the only other rule basically is I'm going to pick an album that was released by Frontiers, because, you know, that is kind of the point of this.
There has to be some sort of limiting factor there.
Yes. And this is, in this case, made this extremely limiting, but I think that's kind of the best way to do that. So we start off with the letter A, and we are starting off with a band that almost everybody will have heard of, specifically for their big hit song of the 80s, but, kind of a little bit more to the story from these guys. This was the glam metal rock, hard rock band from Los Angeles, California. The band is Autograph, and the album in question is their lone release on Frontiers Records, and that is Beyond. It was released in 2022. Let's talk a little bit about the band first. Of course, the song that everybody knows is Turn Up the Radio from 1984, a huge hit for the band. The original lineup for this band was Steve Plunkett on vocals, Steve Lynch on lead guitar and backing vocals, Stephen Isham on keyboards and backing vocals, Randy Rand on bass and backing vocals, and Kenny Richards on drums. So that was the original lineup back in 1983 when this band formed. They stopped playing in the late 80s and had a hiatus until the early 2000s. Came back for just a short stretch then another hiatus. That's when Plunkett left the band and Simon Daniels came in to be the lead singer at that point, all the way through basically what would end up being the end of the band. And that had to do with, unfortunately, a legal battle with Steve Lynch, the original lead guitarist, who won the rights of the trademark against Daniels, Weiland, and Bell. Who supposedly were going to continue touring, but not with the Autograph name. But this album is interesting. You know, had the chance to listen to it. I don't know a lot of Autograph's catalog besides their hit, so it's hard to compare what this sounds like to what maybe their classic sound was. But it does feel a little bluesy, feels a little bit like this band could have toured with Whitesnake and it would have really fit. This album kind of has a sad tone to it. Frontiers announced that they had signed this band back on January 31st, 2022, and were excited to announce they were going to release a new album, Beyond. And it was just past the middle of the month of April when Randy Rand was basically finishing the final masters and everything was getting sorted out as far as when the release was going to happen. And then just a few days later, on April 26, 2022, Randy Rand passed away, and it just really sent shockwaves through the whole band. And unfortunately, he was never able to kind of see this album come out in 2022. But it was, it ended up getting released a little bit later on in 2022. And, even the press release from Frontiers at the time mentions, Simon Daniels. Of course, he'd previously been with Jailhouse, Flood, One RKO, but mentioned kind of a hard edge bluesy voice, to his singing, which definitely comes across in this album. The new, Rand, who before his passing had mentioned that they were heavier than before, but you still have the melodic vocals and the catchy hooks. Definitely kind of felt like a new start for the band, and maybe they were going to kind of go on to release several albums from Frontiers, but unfortunately, with Rand's passing and then the subsequent legal battles for the rights of the name of the band, that didn't really happen, unfortunately, and so this would be the last release, at least to date, under the name Autograph. Obviously, Lynch owns the rights, so I guess in theory he could put together a band and go out as Autograph. But a really, really solid album. It's kind of what you expect from the Modern Frontiers albums. It's really well put together. Feels like it's very polished. A lot of really catchy tracks on this, and I think... it's definitely worth kind of a full listen beginning to end, to kind of go through it. But really enjoyed getting to check this out. Really sad to kind of hear the circumstances around it and that, there wasn't that follow up afterward. But definitely worth checking this out. Beyond from Autograph. If you are a fan of the band back in the day, I think you'll find something here that you'll really enjoy. But Mike, get your thoughts on Autograph.
Yeah, again, like you, I was aware of their hit, but not really a whole lot else. Yeah, kind of an odd situation, though. You have basically two guys who were kind of the last remaining original members that were still somewhat active in Lynch and Rand. And when Lynch decided to take a break and then Rand unfortunately passed away, it kind of left Lynch probably justifiably thinking, this is my band still. Like, yeah. I'm still, Wikipedia mentioned he planned to take a temporary break. Like, he wasn't just going to disappear entirely. So you just kind of wonder how that plays out, but like, you can't totally blame him for thinking this is my band still. It's wild, but, I listened to like 3/4 of the album and it's good.
Yeah.
I don't have a whole lot of frame of reference to say, hey, this is what Autograph's supposed to sound like, and it doesn't reach that mark. I think it's just quality kind of bluesy rock that fits in really well with what Frontiers does.
Chris joining us in the chat. And yeah, unfortunately, it does seem like there are several bands of that era where you run into this issue, and a lot of it comes from original member leaves the band, whether temporarily or otherwise. Other band members either pass away or retire or whatever it may be, and then you have whatever exists of that new band that wants to continue to do what they've been doing. And maybe the original members aren't real keen about that. Maybe they want to be involved, or maybe they want to go out and tour and do their own thing. And, you end up, obviously Queensryche was a situation where you kind of had, that whole dynamic about,
it was that one period of time where you basically had two Queensryches releasing an album around the same time, one being Jeff Tate, one being the band. And it sounds like they're in a much better place as far as just kind of being happy with where they all are, which is great to hear. But yeah, I mean, Rat's gone through it, like Chris mentioned, Great White. I think LA Guns had multiple iterations of them over the years too. It's crazy. And I understand the value in the name recognition, but there's this part of me that thinks whatever your classic lineup is, to me, maybe that's just the band. And if people want to fight over it that have moved on, you all need to just tour under something else.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a way to do that without infringing on anyone's copyrights, whether you just come up, you put part of the band's name in your
Jack band. Russell's Great White.
Yeah. For example, like, I think that's a way to do that without, to let everybody know, like, hey, this is what you're coming to see, but it may not be the original lineup, or he may be the only one left of the original lineup.
I think nowadays it's probably not as big of a deal because everybody's online, but you think some of these bands, you may not, unless you're out buying the magazines that may or may not even be up to date, you could potentially go to a show expecting one thing and getting something entirely different.
Yeah, for sure. And again, in most cases, when you look at these very objectively, you can kind of sympathize with people on both sides of these arguments, that they both kind of have a legitimate case as to wanting to kind of do their own thing or wanting to kind of go forward with the name of the band. And it's unfortunate for Autograph that it kind of went down that way, because again, I couldn't quickly find what the other members of the band were doing. I'm sure if I do a little more digging, I can find it, but that would be one thing that even the Wikipedia page doesn't even mention, which you think would have been nice to say, hey, these three have now formed this band called this, and you can find the information on that there. But whoever updated the Autograph Wikipedia page didn't care enough to actually do that. But again, really good album. Again, kind of sad to see that it kind of ended, and the way it ended, obviously very tragic with Rand's passing. But next week, we're going to continue on. The randomizer has chosen. I'll tell everybody next week what it has given me for the second week of letter A for Frontiers bands. But I'm kind of interested. It's another band that only has a limited number of Frontiers releases, so picking an album was pretty easy. So we'll get a chance to check that out. So that is The Vault for this week. And as mentioned, we've got one more new segment on this podcast. Mike came up with this idea, so we're going to let him kick it off in a moment. And it's because obviously our Vault segment shortened up now that we're not going through every band that came out in a certain year, every album that was noteworthy. We're going to add something called the Power Trio. It's going to be your weekly hard rock hat trick. We're going to go through, and thank you to ChatGPT for coming up with some of the corniest.
We got more of them, so
we got 50 of them. Yes, we'll come up with a new one every week. But basically, it's a chance for us to pick some topic and just give an example of three bands or three singers or three something that fit the topic, and not in any way where we're going to go into like full detail discussing it, but just kind of off the top of your head, really quick kind of answers that we thought would be interesting. And it's another one where we queried ChatGPT to come up with some suggestions. And again, because ChatGPT I've used for like naming the podcast and all this other stuff, it kind of knows me at this point. So I feel like this being on the list made a ton of sense. And the question for this week, and you're welcome to join us in the chat or in Discord, join the Discord, by the way, and give us your own answers for this. It'd be interesting. Chris posted a topic in the general channel where you can just reply directly to that topic with your answers. But our question for this week is the top three hard rock songs that would make a killer wrestling entrance theme. And one thing I want to kind of note is, you know, we're going to talk about hard rock songs, but for the purpose of our podcast, if it's a band that we would talk about on the podcast, it fits as an answer into this question each and every week. So
I think even in this case with wrestler entrance themes, it almost opens it up beyond music we'd normally talk about. If you actually think that there are songs outside of the hard rock genre that would fit, by all means, just throw it out there, because it might be hilarious.
Absolutely. I think Chris is going to put his three here in the chat while he types those in. Mike, I know you got another opinion that you'd like to share before we get to our opinions, while Chris is putting his in the chat.
Yeah, so another Empire member from way back, the days of the video rental wars, a friend of mine I met back in the early 2000s, Shane. I like to bounce ideas off of him as far as video games, music, anime. He's plugged into all of that. So I posed the question to him, and he got back to me about a minute later, and his choices were number one, Cradle of Filth, Cemetery and Sundown off their 2006 album Thornography.
Okay.
The band Skillet with their song Monster off of 2009's Awake. And finally, one that I kind of was bummed I didn't think of it, Ed Guy, Superheroes off of both the Superheroes EP and the 2006 album Rocket Ride. I thought that was, you know, he started going one way and then he kind of zagged the other way with the Ed Guy. And I thought that's tremendous. I love that pick.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed I didn't go for Ed Guy, because obviously I love Ed Guy. Yeah. And that's a great song. And that's a great pick. And there are three really good picks there. So we'll let Chris make his picks in the chat, and then we'll talk about those. But I think this really opens the door. And if you have ideas for what you want us to pick in this list, obviously we have ChatGPT ideas, but if you have an idea for something you'd like to hear us have a take on, again, leave in the Discord, leave it in the YouTube comments. We'd love to check on it. Mike, give us Chris's picks.
Yeah, so his first pick through the chat is White Zombies' El Fantasmo and the Chicken Run Blastorama from their 1995 album Astro Creep 2000, or the remix from Super Sexy Swinging Sounds. You know, I was going to go more mainstream with White slash Rob Zombie and go with something like Super Beast, but that one certainly works too. Pick number two is Linkin Park's Paper Cut. I mean, new metal, that seems fair enough. I can't blame him there.
For sure. We'll wait for the chat for the final
incoming pick. Number three.
But yeah, good, interesting picks. And again, I think the fun part of this is just seeing the variety and ready for pick number three.
Oh, that's a great pick, too. To round out his top three, he has some classic metal with Dio's Rainbow in the Dark.
Yeah, that would fit, honestly. Yeah. I think that is a really, really good pick.
You go that way. Holy Diver would also be fantastic, too.
Yeah,
Last in Line. Can't go wrong with Dio.
As we joked about online on the Discord, that, you know, you could watch an old ECW or AAA pay-per-view event and basically cheat and pick. We tried to pick songs that we didn't believe were already themes. Now, it's possible some indie somewhere has used
some of these. I can't be held responsible for that level of knowledge.
But we do know a lot about wrestling, but we don't go quite that deep. But these are generally ones we don't think have been themes anywhere. But Mike, let's get your picks before we wrap up with mine. I mean,
if you went AAA, you could come up with an amazing list. There's no doubt about it.
Just Psycho Clown's theme alone is awesome. But.
Okay, so for mine, oddly enough, I went Cradle of Filth with my first pick, too. So I was kind of shocked when Shane did that. But I went with the song Nymphetamine, the Fix version, which cuts out a lot of the intro part of it from 2004's album Nymphetamine. Just really, really kind of haunting, like spooky character kind of entrance music. I kind of went to the classic hair metal side with a 1991 Skid Row song Mudkicker off of Slave to the Grind. Kind of mid-tempo, really heavy riff, just would be really cool. And finally, I went with Metallica's The God That Failed off of 1991's Black Album. Again, just another song that has a really cool groove to it that I think would be a great entrance theme.
Yeah, for sure. All great choices. And I was interested to see, like, if you would come close to picking any of mine, because all three of my picks are bands that you got me into. So I figured there was a chance we could have some overlap here. My three picks starting out with King's X with King.
Okay.
Just a really great, vibing, rocking song. Alan Land, My Own Way Home from The Battle.
Yeah.
That's just got a great chorus that would make a great theme. And then I was the only one who actually got the assignment because we're talking wrestling themes, which means we're talking Def Rebel. We are talking Sonata Arctica's Black Sheep, but specifically the live version, because he starts it out by saying Black Sheep and then they play song. And that is all WWE themes, has to start out with a spoken word part before they have the theme.
See, I kind of hate that you mentioned that, because that could have been next week's topic. The top songs that start with a spoken word
part. It can still be next week's topic. The live version of that where he yells out Black Sheep, immediately I thought, that's a great song regardless.
What's the one song of theirs that starts with that cry for help?
And like, I can't remember which one that is off the top of my head, but that could definitely be
Black Swan.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had to throw that in there for that last pick because
no, that's great. I love it.
Def Rebel forever, I guess. So, but that is interesting stuff. Again, share your picks with us on the Discord or in the YouTube chat. And if you have suggestions for topics you want us to tackle over the weeks, please let us know. I think this is a really cool idea that we can build on in the days and weeks to come. But that is going to wrap things up for this week's edition of the Hard Rock Empire. Again, no news podcast tomorrow morning. Just hoping to get through the first day of work at my new job. We'll be back hopefully on Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern. We'll get you caught up on all your nerdy news on the Nerdcast News Report coming up then. Big thanks to Chris for joining us in the chat. Big thanks to Mike, as always, for his work on this podcast. And a big thanks to Stoveleg Media. Of course, I had a chance to talk with Nate Metz today. Worked with him on a bowling broadcast, of all things. Kind of random on a Sunday. But big thanks to Stoveleg for their continued support of our podcast. We'll be back with you again on Wednesday for another episode of the Nerdcast News Report. Until then, don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.